Welcome to the Born and Raised audio experience, presented by Onyx.
Hello, Podcast Nation. What is going on today? So, today we have a repurposed podcast from Cody Rich from The Rich Outdoors. This podcast was recorded, I believe, in 2016, where Cody and Trent sat down with him and they just talk elk hunting. They talk about a giant bull that Cody shot and possibly one that got away from Trent. They talk a bunch of things elk hunting, and we hope you enjoy.
Alrighty, guys, welcome to the podcast again, the dynamic duo.
I don't know about that.
Well, we had you guys on. We were on that bear hunt, and we did an episode on the river. So, of course, I don't know. We talked about all kinds of stuff.
It was a blast.
I would say that setting's a little bit prettier than here, but...
This isn't bad. Right now, we're sitting at Cody's place.
The Kellum Ranch.
Nice, beautiful day. It's not too hot. So, it's a good time.
Perfect.
We're going to talk about some elk hunting. We're going to have you guys on for Wapiti Wednesday. You guys know anything about elk?
No, actually.
I love hunting them.
If you could teach me anything, yeah. I'm all ears.
Every Wednesday, I'm Jack when your episode comes out.
Maybe Trent should listen.
Was it last week with Dirk?
Yep.
Yeah, dude, yep, I loved it. Yep. It's interesting. I like following each person's perspective, and I would say like 10 years ago, when there wasn't so much of a availability of information, like everyone's kind of cut their teeth, but it seems like the same kind of tactics and like what's going on. Like people are like, that's the way they learned. That's the way Angry Spike learned. Like all these things, it's all these similarities tied together. It's pretty crazy.
You know, what's funny is like, imagine if we had this information like 10 years ago when we were.
Oh, it'd be. I was talking about this with Gary Broadhead yesterday. He was up there. We were at Stevens Pass yesterday, and he's like, man, could you imagine if we knew how to call, back even 10, 15 years ago, And yeah, I mean, it was when we first started out, if you could make any sound, it was awesome. It was a pretty good deal. So anyway, it was neat to talk to him, but I heard the podcast with you and Angry Spike. That was good.
That was good. Super interesting. It's funny. It is kind of, it's funny how like everyone, like you said, cut their teeth differently.
Yeah.
But then rounded out very similar. There's slight touches in different.
That noontime,
Yeah.
Rather sleep in and.
I don't know what he's talking about.
Yeah.
Well, that's Ty, but.
Yeah.
He's not here to defend himself.
He is not here to defend himself.
We got to have a good Ty story.
A good Ty story? Pick them.
It's appropriate for air? Yeah.
I mean, just pick one. I'll think of one here shortly.
Well, speaking of Ty.
Yeah.
So tell me the reason I had to have this story on the podcast, because this is my favorite Born and Raised story. It's probably one you guys get a lot about the one that got away, Trent. Remember that time you didn't take your bow?
I'm done with this podcast right now.
Yeah?
Yeah, I remember the time.
You don't want to talk about it?
It's not that.
Does it bring up painful memories?
It's not painful at all.
Remember
no,
that one time that 350
bull
got away?
At the time, I'm not going to lie to you. So to set the scene for you, and I don't know, this is in, what is it in?
2013, Colorado.
I'm like, talking DVD so people can see it. I mean, I'm talking YouTube. Which one?
It has not been on YouTube. We'll put it up.
It will be on YouTube.
It's on the collection.
Anyway. So, Cody.
But to set the scene, how many 6 points have you killed up until this point?
See, this is why I need to leave. This is why. I didn't know this was going to be just firing arrows at Trent's face.
It happens.
No. I have never killed a 6 point, everybody. I think this has been talked about on maybe 2, possibly 3 to 4 podcasts, and if not, in front of a lot of people. I have never killed a 6 point bull elk in my life, and I've hunted them for a long, long time.
And he's killed the most bulls out of all of us.
I've killed quite a few of them. Yeah. but
So that's a good set the scene starter to like Trent's epic fail. I mean, not that it was an epic fail.
close to it. Yeah. So we're out there and doing it, and we split up. What happened was,
well, here, Colorado, 2013. Never been there before. Talked to the biologist. You know, it's those typical little rag five Colorado bulls.
And we were going for numbers also. Yeah, we're like, okay, we just want to film some elk, and we want to just kind of get some awesome footage. And, yeah, numbers are awesome. We're all in, you know, because we've never passed up a bull in our lives. None of us have.
Still to this day,
never pass up a bull. So, because when there's five guys hunting together, it's like, you pass up a bull, you better stand in the back of the bus, buddy, because you don't get to shoot till everybody else has a chance to shoot. And so, and when you're trying to kill a bull, especially a Roosevelt bull, if you get five opportunities a year, you know, within the group, that's good. I mean, that is really, really good for hunting. And so that's how we cut our teeth, and that's the way we go to about it now. And so, go ahead, Cody.
Yeah, so typical fashion, we roll into the trailhead at like 2 in the morning, never been there before, sleep under the truck, get all of our crud together in the morning, still making, you know, the butthole sandwiches and that whole, like, at the trailhead, not prepared, head on in there, and we're in about 3 miles, we kind of split up in a couple groups, it was Trent and I, and then Steve and Ty, and Trevor and his dad, or Trent and Trevor's dad, was going to come join us the second week. So there's the four of us for the first week in there. And as we're going in, like, we stop and we get on the Rhino radio and get the weather report. And it's like, it was a year that, like, the flash floods in Colorado where people were dying. And like,
oh, Jesus.
Yeah, I mean, it rained on us every single day there for 13 days, 14 days, like every afternoon. It's like, here comes a storm, you get out a tarp or some sort of shelter and hunker down. And we had one of the most insane, like, lightning storms happen right on top of us.
Oh,
I mean, it just poured, and we're just like, well, this is a fun way to start a 14-day backpack trip, soaking wet. And that first night, Trent was shooter, and, it took us most of the day to get in there, and had a bull screaming and called him in.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
And all of a sudden, it's like,
it was a 6 point. So
a rat, actually, I think it was a 6x7.
Yeah, wow, not a big deal. So
Trent's gonna pass.
Yeah. So here we are hunting Colorado rag fives, and a monster comes in, and we're like, oh my gosh, where are we at? What is this all about? Doesn't get a shot opportunity, but it was like great encounter. Kind of Jack. Here we are, blind, drove 1,500 miles, I don't know, 1,300 miles, and, like, landing bulls, rubs everywhere. So that night at dark, set up camp, and bulls are screaming all night long. And we're just like...
And mind you, we are at our hunting spots. It's not like we go, hey, Larry, where do you hunt in Colorado? You know, what do you got for us? No, we just take a dart, pretty much, throw it on a map, and go, okay, what's that look like? Well... Looks like there should be elk there, and that's where we go. We had no reference. We don't steal people's spots. We just went and said, wow, that looks good. It looks like a lot of roadless stuff that we can get in deep and on our backs, and let's go. And that's where we found this.
So we set up camp that night. Like I said, bulls bugling all night. Wake up the next morning. Trent's like, hey, well, I almost had a shot opportunity. I'll let you be shooter today. Like, sweet. So he's gonna
mistake number one.
Yeah. So here it is, and we were actually up before daylight, bulls bugling, and right there we kind of went to the we were kind of getting stuff together, and Trent takes and straps his bow to his pack, and Ty goes, what are you gonna do with that? The rule is, and we always had these rules about, like, how we were gonna do things. And the rule was, if you were filming, you left your binoculars, you left your calls, you left your bow. Like, your whole job that day was to film, and that was it. So Ty, of course, just chirps in.
I like how he changes his voice for Ty.
He's got a manlier voice than
me.
Yeah,
it's okay. Like Ty's sitting right here. Yeah. You know.
And so Ty just starts chirping on Trent like, you better leave your bow. You know, that's against the rules, and I'll let.
Oh, now, yeah, mistake number two. I thought we went over mistake number one, so we're at two now. So, yeah, mistake number two, and I thought, you're right. But at the same time, I'm thinking, well, we heard bugles all night, so there is a chance. You know, you could get two elk in one day, you know. We've done it before. We've done it a couple times before that. And anyway, so I thought, you know, yeah, I'm going to stick to the camera, stick to. And so I took my bow, put it in my tent, and walked away.
At that moment, in your gut, where you're like, this is a bad idea.
I didn't, actually, at that moment. I was going, you know what, you're right, kind of thing, you know. And, yeah, and then, well, there was other moments that I really, really regretted. But, yeah, at that moment, I was thinking, okay, yeah, pay attention to the film. Because we've done a lot of films, and we really take pride in how they turn out. And if there's anything left on the table, whether it is as far as, okay, yeah, I need to call at this point or something like that. No, you're cameraman. You don't do any of that.
You got to film it, right?
Yeah, you have to focus it. You have to get the iris right. You've got so many jobs to where, you know what, all your job is to capture what goes on, and you're just a fly on the wall to the people that are actually hunting. And that's what you have to do, is just shadow them. And so, and that was us at the time. That was Born and Raised. I mean, that's what we did.
Yep.
And then so, and I'm sure everybody listening to this can see where this is going.
So we step off the face of this ridge, and it is like sound off, and it's like 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 bulls respond. And then from them, another bull responds. And it's just like, holy Mecca. I mean, probably some of the best bugling we'd ever experienced, I think. Maybe the year before in Wyoming was good, but still, hands down, some of the best elk hunting I've ever seen. First day, full day in there. And so, like, to the point where Steve was shooter, Ty was filming. Steve, of course, Ty didn't have his bow on his pack.
No.
Yeah. And so it was like, well, let's just split up, and we'll just go try and kill two bulls instead of us being a team of hunting a four. So
yeah,
we started down on the ridge. They split up chasing a bull off to the right. We went off to the left. Next thing you know, we've got a bull coming in. And next thing you know, I hear Steve and Ty bugle sneaking in on the bull that we're hunting. So then we're back. He's calling for me now, basically. So we join back up. And that bull's spooked out, little rag 5 or 6.
Got close, too.
Got close. So yeah. Inside bow range, almost 50 yards. Just almost. Couldn't get a shot. So then I'm like, okay, which way are you going to go? Okay, we're going to go right. We're going to go left. So we split up again. And it was like all day long, there's a bugle down there. And it's like we just kept chasing bulls, and wind switch or something, you know, didn't work out. And I think that day we were on like bull number 9 of the day.
Yeah. I mean, I'd like to replicate that.
I mean, like I said, it was some of the best elk hunting I've ever seen. I had a spike come by that I could have shot, but it was illegal because I had to have a 5-inch brow tine or a 4-point there. So I actually couldn't legally kill a bull that was standing there. I would have shot even though there was big bulls around. And so we were down on the bottom. We were getting ready to have lunch. Next thing you know, a bull cracks off on his own up above us. And it was like, day 1, 2, 10,000 feet, and it's steep. And it was like, huh. And that experience of going as we're back home, like you could have made the climb, no big deal, never have to stop, and you make it like a quarter of the way what you think you should be able to, and you're just out of breath. Just crazy experience, different from hunting the Coast Range. And we literally slid up there. I think we cow called once, and this bull cracks off.
It didn't take much, I remember that.
To the right. And it's like, next thing you know, you hear stuff breaking. And I bugled one time, and here he comes. And I remember it was kind of unique because it was in the timber, and there was like one light where the sun was coming through, and there was a log laying across there, but it was up like 4 feet off the ground. And I just remember seeing the tops come through, and I just saw like 4th, 5th, and 6th. In the back of my mind, I'm just like, holy shit, that's a 400-inch bull. Like, knowing that it wasn't that big, but it was just like, I've never seen anything like that. And it comes out, and I was at full draw. It steps out and stops at 30 yards, just looks, punk, and I shoot him. and up the hill he runs.
Were you panicked? Were you just like, don't think about it?
I mean, once like it was like that, you know, once you click into that decision, like it's okay, I'm going for the shot opportunity. I know where he's going to come. I'm already at full draw, anchored, aiming at the point where he's first going to come out. I was going to call to stop him, and he comes out, and it's the first opening that he can see, and he stops as well. So, like, I literally, my pin did not move from the point that I mean, he walks in and stops naturally where my pin settles and shot. Yeah, I mean, so it was just like it happened quick. He runs up the hill, and you can see him up there, and he's like 80 yards through the timber, and you can just see him shaking his head. And then he did the run down and crash. And Trent and I were just like, oh, my gosh.
I couldn't believe it. I saw him through the lens, and I was like, I think I said, Cody, that's the biggest elk. That's the biggest bull I've ever seen in my life. Because it honestly is the biggest bull I think I've ever seen in my life.
Yeah.
It is. I mean, it was three boatloads.
What 359 was it? Is what it is.
Yeah, 360. Yeah, you don't see that
when
here.
You grow up hunting Roosevelt.
Yeah, and you don't see that
360
here.
Bull, you're
no.
Like,
you don't see two
Bigfoot.
Yeah, exactly. Oh, yeah.
Yeah. It's just like you just killed a unicorn. That's awesome, man. You know, it was crazy. And yeah. And the thing that you actually never have seen on film, the insult to injury, is while we were sitting there.
That's right.
There was another.
While we were waiting that token half hour, you know, we knew we heard him crash. We just chilled.
What else do we have to do, right? You know, because Trent don't have a bow.
Watch the seconds click button. Yeah, yeah, Trent doesn't have a bow.
No. And so we hear, I think we hear.
Heard a stick break.
Stick break up above us. Like,
look, and 30 yards, here's another 6-point standing to our left. Like a 280 type bull.
Could have been a unicorn, who knows? But yeah, it's, yeah, standing there. And he stays there and like moves around. And then there was another 5-point, a smaller bull, like a rag bull. That comes
Trent,
in
the writing was on the wall.
Dude,
at this point,
dude,
you pick up Cody's bow and you start practicing.
You learn that 31-inch draw length. You stick it behind your ear and you just let
matter.
It rip. Doesn't matter.
So the interesting thing about it is Trent is left-handed. I'm right-handed, but I'm left-eye dominant. He's right-eye dominant. So he could theoretically.
I can't shoot a left. I've shot a left-hand bow lots before.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
I think the hardest part.
I can shoot a left-hand bow. I can bat left-handed. I can do anything left-handed. But I shoot rifle right-handed, normal, you know, and a bow right-handed.
I would think the hardest thing about shooting a left-handed bow would be drawing it back.
So that all this goes down. It's pure chaos. We're like the best day of elk hunting I've ever seen. I mean.
Oh, we're both on cloud 9.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just cloud 10.
We call on radio, Steve and Ty are like, just shot a bull, pretty sure he's dead right here. And they're like, well, we're over on this other mountain. I'm like, well, don't worry. We'll just break him down tonight, hang him up, and we'll meet you back at camp. And it'll be way past dark. Okay, no worries. Because this was about 4 o'clock in the afternoon.
Yeah.
So we finally go up there, find arrow, walk up. And don't even, like, go to get to the blood trail. Well, he went up the hill, and then he ran kind of back down. As we went to go get to the blood trail, like, he was laying right there to the right. And it was, you know, you walk up, and it's like,
huge.
What did I just, like.
It's huge.
Just tines that you just don't see, you know. I mean, just complete shock. And so we got all our photos done, and we're going through and just kind of in amazement. And Trent's like, I got to score this thing. I'm like, what are you talking about? Like,
so this is something that we've never, ever, ever, ever talked about on any.
No.
Any. Yes. I carried a tape measure in my pack.
Like,
I don't
old,
kill big stuff. Don't get me wrong, guys.
You know, the rollout.
In case he's got to measure that raghorn.
In case I have to measure someone else's stuff.
If it was a 5-inch brow tine, is what the tape measure
that
was
what
for.
They were talking about. And I'm like, should we bring a tape measure? Because what's legal in this unit, it has to have a 5-inch brow tine.
What, are you going to measure a bull on the hoof?
Yeah, exactly.
Dude, like, you don't know. You don't know. It's got to be legal. And so I've always kept a tape measure in my pack, and I don't know why I have, honestly. But
it was the first time. Like, and we don't, like, score is nothing for us. I mean, it's a reference point. I mean, when someone asks, but it's not whether or not it was a good hunt or not or quality. So anyway, so we actually sat down and scored it out just out of curiosity. I think we came at that 360 mark. Like,
we were right in there, I think.
Yeah.
And
it was like,
no way.
We screwed this up, you know, like.
But at the same time, we had the time to do it. It was still plenty of daylight left. We're like, well, we'll have this thing taken care of. There's no way we're going to get back to camp, you know. let's just score this thing out. And because it was the biggest thing I think both of us had ever seen.
Yeah.
It was huge. And so.
So now the work begins. And Trent's a pretty much the butcher man. I mean, he rallies on getting meat taken care of. So we've gotten half this thing done in 20 minutes once we, you know, start getting into it. And we're just getting ready to flip it over to the other side. I got the tenderloin. I think I was standing over the elk getting the tenderloin on the first side, and Trent was getting some game bags out of the pack, and we hear this branch break. We're like, what the heck? And it's like downwind from us.
Huh. Straight downwind. And then right after the branch breaks, this just scream, just a giant bugle.
I mean, and like we're at a kill. It's not like you're whispering. Yeah, like we're laughing excited, and we're having a good time. Up. Zero elk sounds of Nat. I mean, there's no elk sounds of any sort of, you know, so, but we hear this stick break and this bull screams and he's like 50 yards.
Oh, wow.
And we're like, what the heck? So I just stand there. I had the camera set up doing a time lapse. So as he's coming in, it was Trent's over at the packs, and I picked up the camera, and it was still like shooting the time lapse mode where it's like record, stop, and I'm like, son of a gun. And this bull steps out, and finally I get the camera figured out, and I pull it up, and I'm just like, holy cow. It's a bull as big as mine, if not bigger. It's got bigger tops on than my bull, and it had a seventh point on it. And it's standing at 25 yards.
And biggest thing I've ever seen in my life. Huge second. I mean, it was.
Yeah.
It was like, I mean, the day of the giant, and it was just like, I look over, I'm like, oh my gosh, that's awesome.
I love in the video, the look on your face is like pure excitement / disappointment.
/ weirdness.
It's, yeah, you're like, yeah. So amazing and so not amazing at the same time.
The crazy thing is, though, this bull stands there, and I video it for 7 minutes.
Looking right at us. I mean, we're over a carcass. So, we're, you know how it is. Yeah. You know? And it's an S8 show.
Stuff spread all over.
Everything's spread all over, and the carcass is all with the, you know, when you pull the skin back, it's all white, you know? And I mean, it's not like it's camo by no means or nothing. And he just walks straight at us. And then screams again, and he stays there on film for seven?
It was 7 minutes.
Seven minutes.
How do you think that is?
It could have been smell. It had to do with smell. It had to do with smell.
I was wondering that too. Like, if you think about it, like, can they smell a particular bull? Because dogs can smell like a particular dog.
It's an interesting.
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah, that's true.
It's to the point where I think it. It had to be that those bulls, because like we walked into the mecca of rut, what was going on, and you know, with that other bull there and that 5 point, like there had to be some just back and forth. And so it's like, I haven't heard from Tim lately. I'm going to go see what's going on over here. And he, you know, pedals over there.
Especially two bulls that are that big.
Exactly.
Kind of like the top thing. Like, that's probably someone, another bull he knows very well. I mean, horses know other horses. Dogs know other dogs. Why wouldn't elk know other elk?
And that's the one thing I've thought about since then that I don't think we've ever talked about is in that unit, we've hunted that a couple different years. We've seen more bulls than cows by far in that unit. We've seen a number of maybe in 2 years, I'll bet less than 10 cows in that whole unit. And lots of bulls. So I think there's so much competition maybe that they get to know each other and get to know which bull is the king of the mountain. I don't know. I have no idea. But as far as that goes, that's the assumption that I have. But yeah, it
All right, back to the story here.
Yeah.
Back to the Trent.
So Trent's standing over my bow and I'm like, and he gives me the no way. Like,
and Cody's doing, you know, if you guys could see me, he's doing the head nod, like down and out going, get it, grab it. And I'm like, shoot him. And I'm like, dude, we'll get him tomorrow. There's enough elk here. Don't worry about it. We got this kind of thing. Like, but it was.
Then insult to injury as he turns.
Oh, he does.
And then walks up broadside, like 20.
Are we on mistake number 6 or 16?
I don't know. I can't even remember. Like, it was almost throwing dart range. You know what I mean? Like, you know.
Oh, it was rude. It was bad.
And then he never spooked. It's like he barked one time and then just walked off.
Seven minutes he was within bow range. At one time he was like 23 yards, perfect broadside, and screaming his head off at just looking at me with blood up to my elbows sitting there over my pack, small tears coming out of my eyes, just going, why?
Why? I remember filming him, and I look at the bull, and I look at Trent, and he, like, does the handgun mark.
Yeah.
And, you know, shoots himself in the chin, like, you got to be kidding me.
Cody, all night, he was like, dude, I'm so sorry. I'm so sorry. I'm like, why are you sorry, man? At the end of the day, that is the coolest experience that we've ever had. I mean, together as hunters and as friends and as brothers, that is so awesome. I mean, that is that you won't ever, if I had a bow and say whatever happened, I mean, it would have been great if it would have been, wow, look at that story. But look at the story we get to tell now.
Oh, no. It's, yeah, it's looking awesome. Looking back, it's a pretty awesome. Epic story.
It's awesome.
You're going to remember that one forever.
And we have video, time. Like, you could hear this story from someone, but, like, to actually sit down and be able to watch it, you're just like, no way that just happened. Yeah. But the best part is, after the bull walks off, I walk up to Trent. I'm like, what do you think? I'm going to donkey punch Ty tonight when I see him.
Yeah, yeah. Ty, don't bring that bow.
Ty, if you're listening, I'm sure you get enough crap for that one.
But no, it was a pretty epic. It was an epic, epic hunt. And but we got back at it, and the next day we called another bull in, and of course it was a 5-point, and I shot that one.
So yeah,
that was pretty cool.
The crazy thing is, we didn't quite realize it. So Trevor, we packed that bull out. I went to town to pick up Trevor and Daryl. Their luggage didn't show up, so they had to wait an extra day. Come back in. I think Steve almost killed a bull, or Ty almost killed a bull while I was gone. We come back in, and Trevor kind of got in that same mecca of bulls. Ends up being that exact same bull almost a week later. Has him full draw like three different times, but in some thick timber, never could get a shot. We've got video footage. Sure enough, when he turns, you can see that 7th point. You're just like, oh my gosh.
He's so, so big.
Yeah, it just was like,
beautiful.
Yeah, all week long, it was the, you know, close calls. And then finally, the last day, the furthest away from the truck we'd been the entire trip, Ty killed a 300-inch 5-point.
Oh, wow. That's
yeah, it's happen. It is, I should say that. It does have sixes, like 2 inches, but it basically is like, it's just a 5-point, but it was rad.
So one of the things that came up, we did the elk round table a few weeks ago, and someone asked, like, hey, when you have, you know, say 5 to 10 bulls bugling, how do you manage that situation? The guy had made a statement like, basically, you know, we try to bugle at them, but they just don't care. There's so many bulls. And I've been in that similar circumstance where there's so many bulls that it's like almost seems ineffective. Like, in that circumstance, did you guys find problems trying to call those elk? Obviously, it wasn't that hard. But, like, how do you deal with that differently than, say, one bull?
Go after the closest one. You screw that one up. Go on to the next. it's odds game. I mean, it's tough to say, like, tactically, here's the best thing to do, I think, in that situation. It all depends on what the other bull just did to that bull. Mm-hmm. You know, where he, you know, what his, if he's feeling good, if he's feeling like, eh. So, yeah, that's the toughest part is, you know, you never know what happened last night.
That's my biggest motto in the Hall of Elk Hunting.
What?
Right, but just Cody just said. I was just going to say it. You don't know what happened last night.
Oh, that's true.
You get up in the morning. You've got 5 bulls screaming. You go after one. You don't know if he got his ass kicked last night, and so he's still scared and timid. Or you don't know if he won the whole herd last night because they run all night. My tactics do not change. Our tactics, honestly, as a team, our tactics are bugle, 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 get in as close as you can and try to call that bull in. Not too much different, I don't think, like Corey Jacobson talking to him, which we get a chance, you know, to hunt with him this year and kind of exchange tactics. But yeah, we
don't walk away from any bugle. Not,
if there's a bugle, we never walk away. We chase it clear down. And that stems from Roosevelt hunting. So, on Roosevelt hunting, we'll bugle over 200 times a day. I mean, that's not unnormal at all. And we'll go down one ridge, bugle off one side, go walk down the other ridge, bugle off that side, go clear back out to the road, go clear down the road a mile, go down another road. And we'll bugle so much, and all we're looking for is that one bugle to respond to us. And so we get into rocky territory, Rocky Mountain elk territory, and it's like there's 4 or 5 bugles at us. Mm-hmm. And so it's like they're the aggressor, you know, and it's going, okay, we'll just pick one out at a time and just try to go after that one at a time And it has kind of thrown us for a loop a couple times because we're like, dude, this is the awesomest we've ever seen. And we don't kill anything. It's like, you can't, I mean, when we get a Roosevelt to bugle, we're like, we've got a good shot at this because Roosevelts are so aggressive. I would much rather hunt any day of the week. And I think Cody would agree, a bugling Roosevelt than a bugling Rocky any day of the week.
Oh, hands down. I agree with
any
that.
Day.
Territorial. I mean, it's like,
yeah,
they just live in that small, you know, they live in a one bedroom apartment versus a mansion with a pro, you know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah.
They live in such a small little area. You break that barrier and it's like, what? Who is that?
It's like, game on. Whereas like you go to like where you're in Colorado, they're so used to 10 bulls bugling that they don't care.
Yeah.
They just don't care unless
you're
not
afraid to walk away from you and bugle. No. A Roosevelt?
If you're not within 100 yards, it doesn't matter.
They don't care.
Yeah,
it's so frustrating. It sucks.
It's interesting. And you know, like a lot of this, like we've just reacted in the woods and we really haven't thought of tactics per se. Like, I think it just, we've instinctually kind of just hunted the way we hunt and we all kind of make similar decisions, but we've never really like sat down and, I know, like, listening to Shannon, like, he was really analytical on what happened. And we just like, we screwed that one up. Let's go on to the next. And then after listening to everyone talk, it's like, that makes more sense why that happened here. Yeah. You know, I mean, it's kind of like got me thinking a little bit more of tactical behind it. I think that there can be a strategy that you employ and make happen. Like I said, ours is we're overly aggressive, probably too much at a lot of times.
Which is going to not work on some. And
sure.
It's going to work on some.
Yep.
You're betting on that it's going to work on 60% and not work on 40%.
Yep. Correct.
Yeah, for sure. And so
we're going to blow the bull out. That's.
I think the key is like holding true to your tactic because, you know, if you switch it up, then you're trying to play that 60-40 game and you don't know which 60-40 you're playing.
What happened
the night before? You know what I mean? Like, so if you go in soft, you don't know if it's going to be too soft. And so as long as you stick with the same tactic, I think, you know, and play the 60-40 game 60% of the time, you're
going to win. I think the killer in that game. And it has nothing to do with tactics. It has nothing to do with anything. It's with the aggressive game. It's wind. If you think, oh, that wind's quartering just a little bit, he'll come into my left. He won't go right. You know what I mean? And so I think that's a big key factor in this whole thing is the aggressive game is awesome. And as with all the other plays, you know, the slow play, whatever. I mean, you've heard all the elk hunting jargon or whatever you want to say, but it's that wind game. At the end of the day, it's always, if you don't have the wind, you don't have anything.
And with that said, 9 times out of 10, we'll push the wind. Like,
yes.
Man, right here, it's bad. But you don't know
but
necessarily
know
what 50
ridge.
Yards ahead or, okay, well, that's an open right there. That's going to
draw the wind
sun's
out.
Going up. You know, sun's on it. That's going to be going up right there. Let's scoot to this side. I mean, like, what the wind's doing right here does not contemplate what's going on 100 yards away. Or 200 yards or 50 yards a lot of times. So that's where people, I think, a lot of times are like, oh, the wind's bad.
Are you saying you're conservative or aggressive on
super
that?
Aggressive.
Super really? Aggressive. But
you'd
I will say that's, out. Yes, but I'm just going to, that's what I was trying to get at as far as we have done terrible by doing that. But
I think the best thing you can ever do is not be afraid to blow a bull out. If you say, I don't really care what happens.
I would agree with you totally.
And like when you get too romantic about like, oh, it's not perfect, you'll lose because it's almost like it's so rarely perfect that you won't even make the attempt.
Yeah.
And so like the more times you're like not afraid to screw it up, like screw it, I'm going to try. I blow them out, I blow them out.
Yeah.
And that's why I think it gets tougher when you're hunting like a particular bull. Say you see in a bull.
And that's where like we haven't really like targeted a specific one where it's like, well, shoot, well, if we screw this up, we'll either try and find this bull tomorrow or hunt another bull. You know, we'll move on. I think that's where I would get nerd. Like, I'm scared to death when I draw Winnaha in a year or two. Like, I'm just because, you know, it's like you don't want to screw up a bull of a lifetime type scenario. But at the same point, I'm going for the experience instead of the, you know.
Yeah. I'm not going to let him pass up anything. First guy, little
shoots
rag,
a 5-point.
Little rag four that comes
shoot
in.
It,
if he doesn't
shoot,
shoot that, I'm going to beat him over the head with a bugle.
You're like, you're going to tell Cody, you remember, there's no passing.
No, there's no passing. No.
Yeah, but I mean, I guess that it kind of that.
For those who don't know, the Winnaha tag is like the once in a lifetime, essentially
Oregon tag.
Yeah. That Cody's what? How many points you got now?
I've got 18.
So 18 pressure
so
points.
I think I'm two years out.
As a resident.
In theory.
As a resident.
As a resident.
18 points as a resident.
Yeah. So I think once you get to like those big bulls, you look at the guys that hunt Nevada bulls or New Mexico bulls that are, they're hunting that single bull. That's where they start to like play the game of not today or not this scenario. And that gets tough. Yeah. Dan, he'll watch a bull for 4 days and not go in on it. We don't know how to do that.
No. And I do think that's helped me because I've done a fair amount of rifle hunting also, like drawing extra tags and stuff. And when you like hunt timber with a rifle, in rifle season, you're not doing a lot of calling, where we are. You're checking the wind every, and so you blow a bull out. That may be the only bull you see all season. So in that kind of realm, you're all about wind. If you're not hunting with the wind, you're not hunting. And so that helps a lot when you kind of revert back to archery season and doing that kind of it's just different tactics, but I keep two wind checkers always on me, two at a time. And it's just like double guns. If it's bad, we always contemplate, well, what do you think? Okay, let's try it. So
what's your thought on like scent elimination stuff?
I just had this.
It's a prime question for Trent.
I don't know. I'm not going to say any names. I just had this conversation with some people I don't believe in it. I'm sorry. I'm just going to throw it out there. Yeah, maybe it can mask it. I don't know about tree stands. I've never done it. I don't know about that kind of stuff. But if a bull, they have such good noses that, you know, you can get away with some things, but I've never fooled a nose of an elk.
Here's the one thing that we do that we've never really talked about. We carry cow piss in a spray form.
Yeah.
And when you're on a setup and that bull's coming and the wind's fickle and it changes, we will just
trying to cover it.
Yep.
And that is just like a quarter. So if the wind's quartered too, I'm just kind of.
And he may, kind of skirt you coming up or something.
Yeah.
And it's literally hoping so that you get that split second where it's like, wait, what is that? And you already came on.
Yeah.
And I actually had a bull the year before in Wyoming, when I was with Chris. We busted him walking through the timber. We were calling, cow calling back and forth just as we were walking, we were covering ground, and we literally blew this bull out of the bed. And he took off and he ran and circled and got downwind of us. And I bugled and the bull stopped down in the timber because he didn't know what we were. He just heard us and jumped up, and he's straight downwind now. And Chris pulled out a cow piss, and you can see it in the film, and you just see the mist, like right bull's down in this direction, and the mist goes right at him, and that bull picks his nose up and then turns and comes right at us.
Huh.
And it was straight down. And this is like day 5 in Wyoming, no shower. I mean, scent at that point. I mean, we wear merino, so it's not a synthetic, but I mean, past that, I wear my Old Spice.
Wait, you wear Old Spice?
100%. I want to smell good for myself.
I at least like wear like the dead downwind or whatever. Like, just maybe it's what's it hurt? You're gonna wear deodorant. Okay, here's an argument. You're gonna wear deodorant anyway. Why not like try to like? What's the difference? It's not gonna be worse.
It's worse for your hunting partner. You haven't hunted with him,
or when you crawl in your sleeping bag and you waft it up and you're just like,
it's true.
Yeah, rough.
I don't know. I mean, yes, I think that there is a point, like where Trent says, in tree stands applications, where you're in a very controlled environment where
you're in the woods for 20 days.
Yeah, exactly. and like, you hunt based on the wind a lot of times. You know, you don't go in that area, just, how they're going to come. And I'd never really done that until I went to Alabama last year and experienced what that whole whitetail tree stand. And it totally made sense. It's like, we can't hunt this stand because a deer come in right here. And a couple nights we pushed it and like, you could hear deer blow out before, and we did the whole scent thing and, in bags and rubber boots and that whole deal. But on a Western hunt, like you just can't. You can't manage that and be practical, I think.
No.
Moving and...
I bet there's a lot of whitetail guys that are like, how do you not think about scent?
Exactly. No, totally. You play the wind and have the wind.
But at the same time, those same whitetail guys go, well, we can't hunt that stand because
yeah, but you're gonna hunt that bull.
We got a southwest wind. We can't hunt that stand.
Yeah.
What?
So no dead downwind. No like
nothing.
A little bit of Old Spice. Ty hated that. Yeah, like when we always put Old Spice on, he'd be like, I mean,
if we wouldn't go as far as cologne. Don't get me wrong. We wouldn't go that far. But
here's my theory.
Pit stick ain't gonna hurt anybody.
My theory on it is that if it gives me 1% chance, I'll do it. But so if I'm picking up, say I'm hunting around here,
it could be that split second that makes or breaks.
Yeah, because it's probably not going to do anything, but it may keep me one more second. Like it could be that bull. You know how bull comes in,
right?
Yeah, it's the elk piss thing. It's going to hold him up for just a half a second.
Yep.
It might. Having said that, if it's say I'm in the backcountry and a horseback in, or I pack in, I'm not packing it. Like it's just not worth it.
Yeah.
Like it doesn't. I don't think it really matters. But if I'm at the pickup and I can have everything I want at my disposal,
you're spraying down.
Might as well spray down. It doesn't hurt anything. I don't know. That's my two cents on it. So on the elk scent, though, I'm kind of curious. Do you guys ever put it on you, or is it just in the air?
In the air.
Because I am super worried about, like, I never put that stuff on me because I don't want to have to smell like it if I don't need to.
Well, and then, like, half the time, there's times that we smell the elk far before we see him or hear him. Mm-hmm. And it's like, whoa. You know, and they were in there last night, and you crack one off, and all of a sudden he torches off where you could have blown, you know, if you just smelled like elk piss the whole time, you didn't know, and then you went over the ridge and blew him out of there.
Yeah.
So I mean, I like the not having, yeah.
That being said, a couple years ago when Josh, every time he went to do a bugle, I'd take elk piss and spray it on his, remember that? Spray it on his ass. Pretty soon he'd be like, God, what is that smell? I said, we must be around him. We must be close to him. He's like, I better bugle again. Yeah, you should bugle again. Every time he'd bugle, he'd put out a big bugle right on his butt. Anyways.
I did a podcast with Ryan Callahan, and we were talking about, somehow it came up with mustaches, and he was talking about the downside is that he always puts elk piss on his boots. But then he has this bad habit of like rubbing his mustache with his fingers.
I've seen you do that too.
Yeah.
Twisting the outsides of that thing.
Yeah. Oh. So then you're like, man, we're in them. We're in the elk right now.
they're around us. Yeah.
So one of the things you said was that you guys, it's nothing for you guys to bugle 200 times a day.
Yeah.
Do you think that there's such thing as over bugling?
I think there's such thing as being too aggressive. I really do. I mean, we've blown out bulls, I think, before that we've looked at and go, God, we should have slow played that a little bit better. But when we kill the majority, and I think Angry Spike, same thing. We kill the majority of our bulls from that 11 o'clock to that 2-3 o'clock hour in the middle of the day. And so our motto is on that whole thing is, we'll even see him like Roosevelt hunting, Rocky hunting. We don't do it as much as far as we just hunt all day Rocky hunting because we don't hunt like clear cut areas and stuff. But Roosevelt hunting, we may see a whole herd of elk in the morning and we just don't even move on them. We just wait and wait till they get back in the timber, get to where they're going. And then we move down in on them rather than. So our motto behind that is obviously when I get close and I bugle and he gets out of his bed, we only have one set of eyes and ears to fool instead of a whole herd, which could be up to 30 mm-hmm. sets of eyes and ears to fool. So, I mean,
and a lot of times noses. They're already going on a destination. And so it's like people are like, oh, yeah, he kept bugling but pushing his cows away. Well,
that's just where he was going.
Just, yeah, exactly. Just it's like
going to lay down. And so,
yeah, but do you think that I know a lot of guys, you get this gripe all the time. Like I've had this, like people come up to me or, you know, in the woods and quit bugling. You're bugling too much. You're going to scare everything out of the country. Yeah, do you think that's a thing?
If you're bad, if you sound not realistic. Yeah, I think so.
And I have a different motto on that. I think you can screw up a cow call 110 different times, but a bugle, I've heard so many different variants of bugles out of real actual elk that, be careful. I would say be careful with your cow calls, and a bugle, you can get away with a little bit more, but.
Do you think there's such a thing as over bugling a canyon?
No, because with our style of hunting, all we're doing is looking for him to bugle back.
Yeah.
So if he bugles back, then it's game on and we're going for it.
Typically, we tend to hunt denser covered areas. So it's you have to call a lot in order to cover the ground. And, you know, it's not like you could stand at the top, rip a bugle, and it's got a meadows throughout and just a couple timber patches. And it's like it echoes through the whole canyon.
Right.
You know, and so you have to just start basically gritting that thing apart with bugles in order to find, you know, where one will torch off.
Yeah.
But we tend to hunt the denser cover just because we're comfortable in it and we can get away with more, I think. You know, feel like you can get away a lot more with it.
And there's a lot of times that we'll rip bugles, like you talked about in one canyon, we'll rip bugles, sometimes shoot 20 bugles. And then by that time, he gets fired up enough to bugle back. And so I guess I would say no, you know, as far as.
No, I would totally agree. I don't think,
you know, all I'm trying to do is get one to answer and get one to start doing that communication dance, you know, the whole dance of the deal. But yeah, there's a lot of people that, I mean, it was so funny. What was it? A couple of years ago, Corey Jacobson.
Oh, and his film and the film tour with the note.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
The note on his truck. You bugle way too much.
The best champion,
seven-time elk champion caller. You bugle way too much. And he's just like, what?
The irony of that is so the one time this guy stopped me and told me I bugled too much, I needed to shut up. I blew the first bugle. And then it was just pure elk that were bugling, and we were just trying to move on a certain bull. And so I get this old timer, no offense, but sure, this old timer's chewing my ass about bugling too much. And I can't tell him it wasn't me because it was elk, and I don't want him to know that was solid elk. He's like, you know, gar, 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 going off about how you're just going to scare everything away. And I'm like, yep. Sorry, I just can't say anything.
I'll keep it in my pack next time.
Yeah, I'll try harder. But that was painful. I got my butt chewed.
Yeah, I mean, like I said, we're overly aggressive in movements on them. You know, and we kind of made that pact. And the one turning point for me, really, for like the lesson of being, you know, you can easily talk yourself out like, well, that can't happen. We're not going to do any good. 2007. We got a bull to bugle, and there was like 40 minutes of light left, but it was a long ways away on the coast, reprod salmon berries the whole way. And I'm like, Trent, there's no way we can get on that bull, because we were like out on this landing. He was all the way, a mile away. I'm like, dude, we can't get on that bull in time. He's like, well, what's not worth trying? Hurt? It's like, yeah, you're right. So we bombed him in, and it was like pushing through dead salmon berries, like against your back trying to get through it. And finally,
I was literally rolling on them to try to make a trail for the people behind me to go on. It was thick.
We literally popped out, hit this little cat road, bugled, bull stepped out, we killed it. And it was like right before dark. And that was the turning point of the realization. Like, I thought 100% that we wouldn't have killed this bull. Yeah. There's no chance that we could have. But there's always a chance if you go.
Yeah.
I mean, always.
There's definitely no chance if you don't.
Exactly. It's like you miss 100% of the shots you don't take. You know what I mean? It's like that.
Yeah. It's that cheesy line that works perfectly.
It is. Yeah. I mean, it is.
That's not saying we should take every shot either.
That's true. So, Cody, what advice would you give your 20-year-old self?
20-year-old self.
Oh, dude, I got that.
Yeah. Okay.
Trent, go first.
My 20-year-old self? Go hunting. Dude, there was bulls so uneducated back when I was 20, you could have stacked them end over end. It would have been horrible.
Yeah, well, what would you do
and hunt every single state that I could.
What would you do differently, like tactics-wise? Like for all those...
Okay, tactics-wise?
Well, I mean, not specifically tactics, but like what would you do differently? Like what did you not know then that you know now? Like outside of hunt more because it doesn't matter.
Are we talking about hunting or are we talking about life?
We could go either, but I'm just like, overall, like you're 20 years old. What advice would you be like, man, go hunt out of state?
To me, and that's what I'm trying to portray to everybody, is back when I had a serious work ethic though. I mean, I worked in Alaska, you know, in the summer times, just in high school, you know, my summers in high school were spent in Alaska fishing boats that would allow me to do it. And then I got a reputation up there for just being a hard worker. And it was simple to find a job And so I had, I mean, I could buy cars. I could, I mean, back when I was 20, I wasn't married. I didn't have kids. I didn't have anything to worry about. I was living at that time. I was living at the fire department because I was a sleeper at a fire department. So, I mean, at that time it was like options were endless. I had money. I would say to everybody, and that's my goal in my role in Born and Raised Outdoors, I think, is to go tell people, go do what you're afraid of. Go do what you don't think you can do, because what all you can do, I guarantee. And that's what I tell people. I was at Stevens Pass this last weekend, and my biggest thing was there were so many people that came up to me and just like, I'm looking at hunting out of state, but I'm pretty scared to do it. A lot of them were just fearful to do it. And I said, I'll be honest with you. I've hunted out of state and not too many years, probably what, 4 or 5 years. And I've never regretted one time that I've ever done it. And it's just like, I guarantee you won't regret it if you just go do it. Everybody says, well, I don't have the money. I don't have, yeah, it's not that much money. If you just save up just a little bit of money and plan for it through the year, take off that 14 days, go over there, go do it. And that's what I would say to my 20-year-old self. Cause I waited so long to go do stuff that I'm doing now that is not that taxing, that is not that consuming of my time with my family, because my time with my family is very important to me. But it's that I would say to my 20-year-old self, go do what you dream to do, because you're right now in the age to do it.
Yeah. It's easier when you're younger too, for sure.
Big time. Big time.
Yeah. That, in the same realm, not so much on the hunting side of life, but that if you live in your comfort zone and your box is this, you know, it's 3 feet by 3 feet and that's your comfort zone, you're never going to grow outside of that until you push those boundaries. And so it's the same of, well, it's easier to make an excuse than go make an experience. Right. And, you know, and that's what the whole thing is for. Like I get people that ask like, well, I don't have the pack for it. I don't have the tent for it. It's all these little things don't matter. If you don't know how to go use them or use your woodsmanship in the woods, it doesn't matter if you got the best of everything and you don't know what the heck you're doing when you get there. So go carve out experiences. And if you can't do the 14 days, then do the 5 days and, you know, and push every year until now all of a sudden your box is 10 by 10 and the next year it's 20 by 20. You know what I mean? Yeah. It's that it, you push for those experiences. And then the realm of going to Alaska or Kazakhstan or like, yeah, you know, like all these wild places, wild adventures, it's not as big as a deal than, you know.
Oh, for sure. And I've always, you know, I've always said like buy tags, not gear. And that's not to say that you can't have nice gear and things, but like I would buy tags first.
That's a really good point.
It's a great,
and it's like
great motto.
The, I don't know, how old was I when I first went to Idaho? It must have been, I want to say 2007, 2008, so 10 years ago. So I must have been about 20, 21, somewhere in there. And I went to Idaho and like on a whim. Again, picked a spot on a map and it seemed extreme. And ever since then, it's always kind of just been like one more step, one more step, one more step. And then I think, you know, it was just doing that kind of stuff. And then I think in 2012, I was like, I'm going to go to Alaska. And I remember like, to me, it didn't seem, it was just the next step. And right, to everyone else, it was like, don't you have to have a guide? Don't you have to have this? You're like, no, I'm just going to go. Like, I'll figure it out. And like, I've always kind of looked at it. And I think people have a hard time going out of state because they're like, it's a $600 tag. What if I'm not successful? You have to, it's a sunk cost, $600 experience.
Right.
And so like buy the $600 experience. Don't worry about filling the tag. It's a bonus if you fill the tag. Like, and it's just going to lead to more and more things. And like, that's like, my advice to myself, even though I kind of followed it, I would do more of it and just like buying experiences. And like, that's no matter what, like, I don't like kids that should not buy expensive pickups or expensive gear. Like, it's just going to stack up. You don't need that stuff. Buy experiences, because those stories, like your guys' Colorado trip, you're going to have that forever. Like,
ever.
And it doesn't lose value.
No.
In fact, the more you make it up, it gains value.
Exactly. Yeah. And that's, I mean, so I guess in the realm of 20, if we talked tactics, I was not, you know, if we go back to that realm, I was not aggressive enough back then.
Same here.
It was just like, oh, he's bugling, but you know, the wind Maybe I'll just back out and come in tomorrow, maybe, and then
or
go back.
We didn't have a clue, and we go, wow, we just heard a bugle. That was the greatest thing ever.
Yeah,
but you were so scared to screw it up back then. You're like, oh, God, I don't want to screw it up.
Yeah, yeah, as same as now.
Yeah. And that boils in those experiences, build your confidence, and then your confidence, you know, if you know, like, hey, this, we're going to go kill that thing, you're going to go kill it. If you're like, ah, I don't think this is really possible, and then chances are you're not.
Confidence is everything in hunting. Yeah. I think that just comes with time. So it's tough to be like, have the dead set confidence. Like, let's go kill this thing. Like, this doesn't happen at like 2019. Cause you haven't had that experience. And I
think the big thing for us, the advantage we've had cutting our teeth on the, you know, cutting our teeth here on the Oregon coast is, we would grind a week to hear a bugle. So no matter what, where, steep, deep, whatever it is, it's like, we're going after that thing. I mean, we've rode way too many miles on our mountain bikes or, you know, spent way too much money and gas trying to find these things. Let's go after it. And that persistence and like true grit kind of has helped us when we go to out of state. And the other thing, I thought about this earlier. A lot of people like hunting the same, you know, they go to the same camp spot every year and they hunt the same meadow and they hunt, oh, the elk were here last week, but then, you know, and they go over there and they hunt for a week and they had a good camping trip, but they didn't have a good hunting trip, you know, when it comes to it, because I would rather go hunt brand new country every single year. And, you know, my goal when I'm 55 years old is to look at a map and be like pins on a map, you know, like, oh, we hunted here and Trent killed a bull here. It was a 6 point in 2018.
No, this is a fictitious map.
But it's just to go, you know, hunt new country because you don't have set expectations. So I think you have a little bit more grind and grit and you just, you want to make it happen a little bit more than, I mean, we've experienced that. Cause like the next year we went into Colorado after this whole killing a 360 bull and all that, we went back in there and it wasn't as good the first few days. And the morale in camp was just like, whoa, what, you know, exactly. Yeah. Cause our expectations were that set, you know, a set point where going into a new country, it's like, I'm going to go over that mountain today. And then if we don't get into them, I'm going to go over the next one. Mm-hmm. Well, you never know what's over the next valley, over the next draw, ridge, whatever. And, you know, if you just hunt the same spot every year, it's like,
you become a master of that spot, but not at the game.
Yeah.
Correct. Which is interesting to watch, like, now knowing some guys. I mean, there's some super successful guys out there. Nothing against them. If, like, that's your thing, that's your thing. I don't really care what your thing is. If you want to hunt the same spot and be successful, cool. Like, everyone has their own thing. So I'm not hating on anyone. But, like, you see people that hunt the same hunt every year, and they're successful. And to me, I would rather be good at making it up as I go. You know, and, like, having that struggle to go to a new unit and be like, figuring it out and trying to get good at it.
It's the fun of it. And it builds that knowledge base. It expands, you know, your box you're living in. It's like all those things, you know, it's uncomfortable pulling up to a trailer in the middle of the night and be like, holy shit, there's 14 trucks and trailers and horse trailers here. Like, how are we going to go kill an elk?
How are you better than them?
And that's exactly what happened with the hunt, exactly that you're talking about. We got discouraged with that place when we went back, and it wasn't as cool as it was the year before. So we up stakes and drove
12 hours or something in Colorado.
Yeah, all night long to go into a spot that looked like, I mean, when you got to the parking lot, it looked like Disneyland. I mean, there was
stock trailers,
horse trailers everywhere and people hunting and everywhere. And we hiked in there because it was a challenge. We went in there and killed two bulls. And the people that had packed in there for years were like, how in the hell did you guys do this? We've been packing for, you know, 40 years out of here. And you guys just went in here, a bunch of rookies to the spot. And you guys just go shoot all our elk. And we're like, I don't know. But it's because I think it was a new challenge. I think it was like this new thing, you know, to us. Like,
yeah, but how many times have you guys gone to new states, new areas, had to struggle bus it out for the, you know, four days and learn that? And so, like, I think that teaches you a lot. And like, I always look at hunting as like, how do I become better in the future, not just successful this year? You know what I mean? Like, how do I go about this to, like, okay, sure, I'm making myself better. Yeah. And like, I want to be good at this game. And like, which is a weird concept because, you know, like you could get in this whole like food versus trophy animals versus scoring crap.
Yeah. You can go as deep as you want.
Oh, that. Yeah. And it's tough because like at the end of the day.
Because you seek that adventure and that experience as much as the. Yeah.
So what is elk hunting to you? Is it meat? Is it adventure? Is it.
It's, you know, like for me, it's.
That's a great question.
There, all those stack together. It's like, is it? It's important for us to fill the freezer for the family. Like, I don't buy beef or hamburger, you know, I mean, eating clean protein. Is it?
Yeah, but you could shoot a spike at your, you know, every year first time.
Totally agree. But it's the experience and the camaraderie. I mean, I'm going to go to a couple states this year and I don't even have a tag.
Yeah.
It's, I mean, and I am jacked about that hunt more than my own.
Yeah.
It's because I'm going to be there and experience it with.
It's a tough answer. There is a tough question to answer. Because that is, I don't, yeah. You know, like we, it a lot is. Of people in the industry like to say, like, you know, it's all for meat, you know, I do it for organic meat, which is great.
And I think that it's answer can change through your,
journey as a bow hunter.
Your journey. Or, yeah. As a hunter. Yeah. I think that answer can change. Honestly, for sure. Depending on how you grew up. Cause when I grew up, it was all about, we go out. It's not a horn hunt. It's not a horn hunt, guys. This is filling freezers. And so, and looking at that and how it evolved just for me personally. And, yeah, it's definitely changed as far as, well, I looked at it the other day and I won't lie to anybody. My wife goes, Trent, you got to kill an elk this year, buddy. That's what you have to do. And she says, yeah, because we're getting low. I mean, that's what it is, you know? I mean, it's not like she goes down to the store and buys the hamburger, buys the, yeah, no. It's, you got to kill an elk this year.
No, it's
right
true.
Right in my face. Yeah.
And so there's always that pressure too. Like I hate to call it a game. You don't want the experience to end, but at the same time, you're like, man, I really got to fill this freezer.
Oh, and there's a manhood to that big time, dude. I mean, whoever says, oh, no, it's not. Yeah, it is. It's providing. You're a provider. Yeah. And we were put on this world to provide for our families. Yeah. And you know what? If I don't provide, I've honestly failed. And so, yeah, I think that's one. But as that it evolves, like I was saying, it kind of evolves into this. Okay. Yeah. I'm providing for my family, but the adventure, I mean, it hooks you like a drug.
I think especially as you get older, you get busier, like, you look forward to that so much. Like at 20, I think you didn't appreciate it as much. You know what I mean? Like now at 30, it's like, oh man.
Looking back, what I'd tell my 20-year-old self is to soak it all in. You know, I remember I was working at an outdoor store here locally and the guy that owned it, like here I am in college. He's like, dude, college is your prime time. Like soak it all in. You have enough money, go do what you want to do. Don't have much for responsibilities. Like it's the most freedom you'll have your entire bit of your life. And I was like, oh yeah, whatever. When I get out and do this, it was true. When you didn't have a family and you know, I mean, so like to soak in those experiences more and not take it for granted. And the thing is like, you can't live life with any regrets. Like if it's something you want to go do, then sacrifice whatever it is else that in your life to make sure that happens. And not, I'm talking your playtime or, you know, cutting coffee out of your day at the stand and save your $350 and, you know, make a cognitive decision. Like I want to go do this and you build it backwards and you build a plan from here's the end goal. What do I need to do? Roadmap it out and make that happen. So you go do it. So when you're sitting here at 80, you're like, man, when I was 35, I should have hunted Alaska for Sitka blacktails when I had that chance.
Yeah.
No, like figure out how to make, you know, and if you're married, make it that, you know, have it that as part of with your partner of like, here's what I want to do, what needs to happen here for the family life. And, you know, because like Trent said, it's a big part of us as who we are as individuals is like raising a family and being a good husband and being there for our kids. And the same balance of being the man, the provider, and go also experience these wild adventures with our brothers, you know? So
it's you fast forward to like being 35 years old and now you guys are doing how many days this year?
Oh boy. 45 days.
45 days. So like how, yeah. I can see the wheels turning.
I'm not doing that. Yeah. I have a 1 week old here at the house, so I'm not going to be gone.
You're not going to be 45 days is a crew. Yes. Essentially.
Yep.
I will be doing the full 45 days.
No
myself.
Kidding.
Yeah.
So how do you convince your wife that that's okay?
You'll deal with the divorce afterwards. No. She is totally supportive of me and totally. I took this leap to do Born and Raised full time, and we realized that, you know, it's going to take time to
some
get
sacrifices
this
elsewhere.
It's going to be sacrifices, and so I'm going to film myself. So
maybe it's not 45 days, but I can see the questions burning in people's mind. Like, man, how do I just get 2 weeks a year? Like, how do you structure that?
Gotcha.
You know what I mean?
Yeah. No. I totally. It's all about planning. I don't know.
Begging for forgiveness?
Yeah, I can't answer that question. Everybody's so different. And even in our crew, everybody's, is so different as far as that goes. I'm not sure how that, pans out for anybody. But what I will say for everybody is you can do it. You can make that
stop happen. Sitting on the couch and making excuses.
You can make that happen. You can make 14 days. You can make 12 days happen.
No, I agree. I think it's about utilizing, say 14 out of an entire year. There's a lot of days to do some really, really good things, burn those brownie points, whatever it may be.
And a lot of it, yeah, I'm not going to talk about women. I'm not going to try to bring that into it. But a lot of it is honestly saying, hey, honey, I want to do this. How can I make it happen?
Yeah.
Because a lot of people don't communicate with their wives as much as they probably should. And once you have that established as, okay, I want to do this. This is my goal. This is something I, want to do. Yeah. And then pretty soon, it's here. Well, like season. It's going to be here in 4 weeks. And it's just like snuck up on us. Yeah, it'll happen.
It's because hunting is more an obsession than a hobby. Like it's far deeper. And I think a lot of people who don't hunt don't understand that. It's like, this is not like I'm going on vacation for a week. Like I literally live 11 months for one.
To do this.
Yeah. Like if you took this away from
me. Wayne Endicott said it best. There's only so many Septembers in one man's life.
Oh man.
And if you do not live with intent.
That's a quote.
Yeah. It is he said that and it struck me to the core. You never know.
Have you ever sat down and looked at how many Septembers you have left? It's scary.
No, don't even. No.
That's some scary stuff to think about. Like, oh.
Think of all the 5 points.
All I'm saying, Trey, is you should probably shoot a 6 point if it comes out this year.
I don't know. You know what? If I pass one up, it might even be better than shooting it. I don't know. No, we just, it is. I just get so jacked up when I'm talking about people trying to live out their dreams. And because I feel like I've done that I'm starting to do that. And it's just like, go get it. It's so surreal of talking to people. Well, I can't do that. I can't do that.
Is it going to be bittersweet when you kill your first 6 point?
Are we back on that already? For crying out loud. I thought we got off that. I don't know what's that emotion. I think that emotion.
Touchdown downs?
I don't have the touchdown dance down yet. I have the handshake down. I've got the, I don't know. I don't know. I think it'll just be another elk because I honestly, in my heart, I want to be as excited if I kill a spike bull as if I kill a 6 point. So honestly, I'm hoping it's that same way, honestly. And that's total honesty. I don't think it'll be like, I finally did it. Yeah. Cause it's not a goal I've ever achieved or not, I have wanted to achieve. It's not like something that I've ever been like, dang it. It's a 5 point, but gosh, I would love to kill a 6 point. It's never been that way at all. It's been like, it's a 3 point. It could be a 7 point. And I don't even care. It's still awesome.
I mean, one of the more emotional hunts. It was a 5 point you killed in Colorado a couple of years ago, that one that he shot mid bugle.
Oh, that's right. Yeah.
Yeah.
And that hunt, like the first week, him and I both pretty much dedicated just filming and calling. And like, so this was on, I think he killed it on like day 14, which it was only like the second or third day he packed his bow the entire trip. And, like the build up to that and like we got it, that emotion. I mean, it could have been a 360 bull and it could have been a 3 point. It was still awesome, nonetheless.
Cried, like, my, cried
yeah,
my eyes.
Yeah, yeah. I cried ran up eyes. There and we embraced for more than a minute, probably.
Yeah, yeah.
There hey, was what a happens hook. In Elkwood stays in the Elkwood.
Yeah. Yeah. Until there's a camera there. There's a
camera right there. But no, I mean, it's true. It's not, there is no, I mean, honestly, it's been, honestly, Cody, I'm not going to lie to you. It's been luck of the draw. Every single time, it's been luck of the draw. I've called in some giant bulls for everybody else to kill just because it wasn't my turn and I was, okay, yeah. I'm tomorrow or I was the day before.
Well, now you got Corey Jacobson calling for you, so maybe you'll kill a monster.
He's not that good, though. Yeah, I don't know.
What's going to be interesting is, like, we fly by the seat of our pants.
Funny.
And when we first started talking about this in, like, January or December, November, December last year, like, Corey's like, yeah, because it was before the draw, all that. Corey, you know, the engineer mind, loved the guy to death. Here he is. He sends a spreadsheet. It's like
he laid it
day out. Day 1 through 10. Here's the matrix of shooter, caller, cameraman between the two. Like there's six of us or four.
Oh yeah, see. It
so,
got real.
So Corey, Dirk, Donnie, and Trent. So there's the four, and then I'm gonna film, and then we've got another guy coming to film. So like the. He actually presented it to Dirk and Donnie that they were going to get an extra day of hunting because now we bring in, he's going to bring in Trent as part of the dynamic, but had this full spreadsheet, like, oh, yeah. It was percentages, like, whoa, like
thinking you're overthinking this just a little bit, pal,
but I can't wait for that experience.
It's going to be awesome.
It's break it, like, tell me a little bit about it. We talked about it last podcast, but like break it down. We're doing 45 days.
So our plan this season, what's going to happen is we're doing 45 days straight. I'll be on the hunt for 45 days and we're going to do 5 states. And so, and in those 5 states, we're hunting with 5 different, big outdoor filming, crews, I guess you'd say. So we start out in Oregon and Hushin is coming to Oregon and they're going to hunt with us for,
Well, we won't be here the whole time.
Right. We won't be here the whole time.
Casey Trevor and B-Mac Steve are coming.
Will. Anyway, we'll start out with Oregon, and then we jump to Wyoming with Elk 101. And so we got Corey, and that's going to be a train
Corey,
wreck.
Dirk, and Donnie, like,
yeah.
Trash talking's already started.
It's already started. It's already begun. And then we jump from there to Pure Elevation Crew in Colorado, and that's going to be a hoot because we're going back to that same place that Cody killed that giant bull. And we're going to hike in and do that. That'll be fun. And then
it was interesting. I was talking to Steve Speck, of XO and Lenny. So their style of elk hunting, I'm like, you know, we got these calls. I'm like, hey, I want to send you some calls. Which ones do you want and what color? And he's like, dude, I just tack a little like pack bugle thing. Like I've never really, I'm like, what?
Like, you know, kind of thick. That realm. It's not like you can spot and stalk. There
yeah,
is no
like
spot
he's
and stalk.
Like he kind of mule deer. They herd shadow and more, you know, sit up in glass and then go tactically stalk them.
Yeah.
And like totally different styles. I'm like, well, you know, and he's like, oh no, I'm all about seeing you guys and calling and I'm just there for the ride. So I'll figure out a call and, you know, if you're a shooter, I'll call or whatever. But so I'm super stoked just to like call and have that experience with them where they.
It'd be awesome just to bugle a bull right into those guys.
Like, yeah, so
I mean, I can't wait. Like, it's going to happen. At some point, it will happen.
So they have a totally different outlook and, you know, and so it's going to be really neat to like have not only deal with different geographic regions, rows of elk, rocky, open terrain, thick, steep, all that side of it. And then the personality complex of who's going and how that, you know, the dynamic it's, and the cool thing is everyone that we're going to be with, there's not a single person that I'm like, I don't know,
yeah.
You know, because like you said, you only have so many Septembers. Like I don't want to spend it with a douchebag.
I mean, wow. That's the quote.
That's the quote. Yeah.
It's going to be on the intro.
So, I mean, we've got just stellar people that we're surrounded by. That's going to be a blast to hunt with you regardless. Yeah. So that's
big time.
Yep.
Then from Colorado, go to Montana.
Then from Colorado, we go back to Idaho.
Oh, that's right. You got 5 states. Yeah.
Yeah. With the Hushin crew. And apparently they have this super secret spot that just giant bulls come into camp. So
that's handy. I've never found that spot.
No, I don't think so either. So that's going to be fun. I can't wait for that one. And then, And then from there, we go to Montana with Phelps. And so we have another champion caller.
This, I like your strategy. Let's just get you gotta, the best callers kinda, in the country.
Yeah, you got to kind of wrap yourself around that. And so anyway, and doing that with John Gabriel and Jason. And then I think Ryan Callahan's going to go on that hunt.
And Nick Schmidt.
Nick Schmidt.
And Nick Schmidt.
Charlie's on the cusp of whether he's going to come call or not. And then, Tyson, I think, is coming too. So.
And then you're going to be at the end of it, right?
Yeah, I guess we just decided this 10 minutes ago.
Yeah.
That we're going to do a live podcast.
At the Onyx.
We said it on the podcast. Yeah, at the Onyx. That'd be sweet.
Hell yeah.
Wouldn't that be sweet? Just do like a live podcast.
We are.
Okay, it's done.
Okay.
Done. It's official.
Perfect. In sand.
Perfect.
Zach, put that together.
So I'm flying out for that.
Perfect.
For the last thing?
Yeah. Yep.
Yeah.
Do we have a date for this? Well, let's not say a date on here. We're already committed to that.
Yeah.
Sometime in October when you get done killing.
Don't look at me. But yeah.
Steve's got the tag on that one.
Yeah, Steve will be hunting.
So I have a tag in Colorado. Trent's got the one in Wyoming. Trevor's going to hunt Idaho. And then Steve's going to have the tag in Montana.
That's cool.
And Oregon, we're just going to try to get the hushing guys.
The irony is like your guys' home state and you guys don't have a tag there. Are you not going to hunt
that? Well, we have tags, obviously, but our goal is to kill. Everybody wants to kill a Roosevelt for some odd reason.
I know. It's funny.
Yeah. It's weird. And so we're like, yeah, we will try our hardest to get you guys a Roosevelt bull. But if you pass up one, you are an idiot.
Yeah. One of my buddies from California is like, wants to hunt a Roosevelt. And, he's this year. I think he only had like 3 or 4 days. I'm like, don't even buy the tag. Like,
no, no. If you've never hunted them before, don't.
No, it's tough. It's tough. It takes time.
It's tough, time. Man. It's tough.
It takes, if you want to kill a good Rosie, it takes minimum 10 days.
A good Rosie takes 10 years. I've killed one. Two. No, I've killed two. I've killed two. Yeah.
Good. It takes Rosies.
Pope and Young.
Yeah. And I've killed.
So what's your probably average 15, day? Five stays. What's 20, your average days?
15 of them. First day. As far as what?
Nine.
So 9 days.
Yeah.
Still tight. That's a short hunt. I mean, I know it's only one tag, so it's not like you guys have five tags per state.
Right.
Sure, but at the same time, that's what is kind of on my mind is travel time in between. Because you know how a train wreck is when you get to the trailhead. You're trying to throw all your stuff together. So you got another half day at least there. So it's cutting down on it. I mean, all that edges into your hunt.
Oh, yeah. Just drive at night. It's fine.
Yeah. There you go. There you go.
Sleep in October.
Sleep in October.
Mid-October on.
Mid-October. So, yeah. It's going to be awesome.
For once, we're actually going to have to, together. In the next month, really get our
calendar
stuff together. No, just as far as like having our food in line.
Oh yeah,
it's like day, you know, you just grab go, you can you know, cycle through that instead of like 45
days. You almost need like a logistics officer that's like, here, pick up in this city, like here's your pack for the next one, here's your pack for the next one.
Yeah, it's gonna be
we have a couple, like I'll be coming back from Colorado, I think, with those guys, have a rig in Boise to come home. Trevor's driving out. He'll come home after that hunt. Steve will drive out to Montana while Trent, which the interesting fun part about this is usually when we go out of state, Trent never drives. Like
ever.
Because he'll get us lost. Not lost, but just like.
Pretty much.
Yeah. It's like, I have no idea where we're going or.
No.
It's like,
just, you send me into the back country or something, I've got this. I've cut timber for years. I know every single back road and everything. You get us on the highway. Not a chance in hell.
He's like, I don't know.
I don't even know where I'm at. I don't even know where I'm at. No, it's going to be. That's why I was telling Cody yesterday or the other day. I said, we need to have like a something on my phone that just tells where to go from state to state so I can just like punch it in because I'm probably going to be the only
I
one.
I think that's already on your phone. I don't know if you know that.
Yeah,
Siri, right? I don't know that. That's the problem.
Head to Colorado Elk Camp.
Nice. I'm gonna have to have the Onyx just running full time on that thing, but it'll be interesting. It'll be interesting.
Well, it should be fun. Yeah, it sounds like a great year.
Yeah, the funnest part about that is like the whole concept with this land of the free is the dynamics of public land and like here locally how things have changed with the private timber companies and access, and it's a pay to play, and you know all these things that. Where it felt like public land before, and then they you know, put more restrictions, which by all means, it's their land. Like, it's a privilege to be able to hunt it as it is. I get it. And to keep the riffraff out and what have you. but all the other states are all public land. It's like, and not draw tags. Like so many people, I met this guy that's from Alabama, and he's, I don't know, I think he's late 40s. His, since he's been like 20, comes out elk hunting every year. And like people, when he gets back from Alabama, is like, they have no, they're like, how do you do that? You know, you got to have all these points to draw tags. He's like, dude, there's so many over the counter opportunities.
Oh man.
Every one of the hunts that you guys are doing are over the counter, essentially, yep. Except Montana, which you could have bought over the counter, essentially.
Yeah, it was a leftover tag.
We didn't leftover tag.
It's same with Wyoming. It's a general. It's a general tag. So
anybody.
It is a draw for a non-resident, but a resident in Wyoming can literally go down to Walmart and buy the tag.
And
so,
even as a non-resident, would you guys get 1 point plus bonus or whatever?
Yeah.
Which is our whole thing in this whole project is anybody can do what we're doing. Oh, anybody.
It goes back to like...
We're not at secret spots. Yeah. We're not at this honey hole that, you know...
Oh, it goes back to like being 20 years old. And this is the thing is when you start at 20, you're like, I'm going to go hunt Idaho. It just builds and it builds and builds. And then now... you're this and you're going to five different states. It doesn't even seem, it seems complicated. That's like the next level to do five states,
but it's not
impossible at all.
Like, no. And the five states is, it's crazy. But
five
any
states
of
is
these,
a little much.
A little much, yeah. But any of these states, any of the things that we're doing, anybody can do.
Yeah.
Anybody can do.
Yeah. You can do three states. Like I've been doing three states for years, just Montana, Idaho, Oregon.
Yeah. And if we're successful in just one state, I mean, anybody can do that. Yeah. Anybody. And it doesn't cost that much money.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't really when you come down to the whole, you know, for a 12-month period, if this is what you want to do.
You just got to live with purpose, man. I mean, that's what I want to do, and you're driven towards that goal.
Yes.
Yeah.
It is.
Absolutely.
It is.
Well, awesome, guys. Well, where can we check out you guys' YouTube channel, all these great videos?
Mm-hmm.
We're going to check out – we guys are going to have the video posted for Trent – passing on a 380 bowl.
Yeah, I think the title will be like the best missed opportunity or the worst
missed opportunity.
Right, I don't know.
After a 360 bowl shot. That's,
yeah. So social, YouTube, everything's just all at Born and Raised Outdoors.
Yeah.
Same websites, bornandraisedoutdoors.com. And then from there, it's actually, if you go to that, you can see it's got an Instagram feed. It's got our YouTube feed. You can check all the videos out. And then we've got a page specifically for the Land of the Free project.
Oh, that's what you're calling it?
Land of the Free.
That's what this project is.
Nice.
Yeah.
So everyone go buy some. And the new calls. We didn't even talk about the new calls.
No, we have a whole new call line out that we
Trent's
specifically.
Expert manufacturer?
Expert, yeah. We designed through Phelps. Yeah, Jason Phelps, great, great guy. And designed a call through him that was call friendly to just about any pallet out there because everybody has this issue with, well, I've tried and tried and tried and can't blow this call. So we just have a three pack. It's a simple three pack of calls with different stretches on latex and different sizes of latex, way different than anybody else's calls out there. And I am not going to say guarantee, but darn close. I guarantee you will be able to blow one of these calls. So I would, and it's not a sales pitch. It's not nothing. Try it. I've seen it work so many times and lately it's been awesome. So yeah, I would recommend people just to try it and everybody says, and I tell people, well, pick up all three. And see what works for you. And they look at me like, yeah, you just want me to buy three calls, not just one. And they do that. And every single one has come back and said, okay, I want the yellow one or I want the black one. And they say, they'll buy five of them.
I get this question a lot too. Like, what Phelps call do you like? I literally run them all. I have literally bought it. I think every elk call out there in my years.
Yes.
And like, it is nothing for me to have a pack when I'm elk hunting that has six different calls in it.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And it's just like, I'll grab one.
Yep.
Feeling different. Grab another one. Mix it up. It doesn't really matter. Like if you bought the three pack, buy the three pack because you'll use all three of them.
Yeah.
And it doesn't really matter. Like,
and if one works better for you, and that's what it is. We had people, I've mentioned Stevens Pass this in the podcast already, but yeah, I was at Stevens Pass this last weekend and giving it to people. And we were at the Northwest Mountain Challenge. And they would buy the three pack. They'd go back to their trailers because they were camping up there. Guy come back and he says, I want five of those. I want five of those yellow ones or I want five of those black ones. And that was the call that worked for him, you know. Yeah. And then five guys later, I want five of those blue ones. And he goes, I can't blow the yellow one.
And really? The last guy blew the yellow one. I mean, I put a bugle in his face and he blew it like, you know, Corey Jacobson. And I'm like, okay, well, that worked for you, but this one and then that guy, that's what worked for him.
It's,
so everybody's
interesting.
Different.
So
everybody's so different.
The yellow one he's talking about is the committed read. And yes. that was the one I like. The one that Trent really settled in at. I cannot bugle with that.
You don't like that one?
I literally.
He cannot make a peep. He can't
I can cow call with it, but I blow too hard for it. And so I have to blow the black and yellow one, which is tagged out, or my favorite's the reason, the blue one. And so it's a higher stretch, a higher volume.
See, I don't really like the blue one, but I like the other two, which is funny.
It's mm-hmm. weird. Yeah. Yeah. Jason Phelps himself, he can't blow the blue one.
Really?
Yeah. So
he
that's
blows
what,
the yellow one that Cody can't blow.
And I blow that one too.
Yeah. Yeah. And so it's so.
But I'm a
palette specific is what I would call
but
it.
But I uniquely place the reed very low, all the way on the bottom part of my mouth against the back of my front teeth.
It's way forward.
Way forward. I'm one of those guys.
You can't.
No, it's just it is so specific to each person that there's no one reed.
We thought we were
best.
Just going to build one, and then going through it, it's like we couldn't settle. You know, it was like, well, that one works for you. That one works for you. That one works for me. Yeah. Like, let's.
And these are total different latexes than Phelps calls. These are totally different than anything he has in his call line. So, yeah, it's our own specific line that worked for us that went through all the volumes of people between me and Trevor and Cody and Steve. And that's what we found that worked.
Nice. So. Well, where can we find those? On the website?
Yep, morganraisedoutdoors.com. Yep. There's a few dealers that are picking them up as well. But yeah,
we should do a giveaway. Can we give a 3-pack away?
Absolutely. We got a bugle tube, too.
And a bugle tube. We're going to give a 3-pack and a bugle tube.
And a hat.
And a hat.
Mm-hmm.
Wow, we got a whole package. We gave it last time we did the best comment on old Blue Eyes over here.
Easy, yeah. Right. Speaking of which, he piped back in. The last little last little Phelps. We put up a vlog on the call building.
Yeah.
XXman31565 or whatever comments. Trent. When are you coming to New York City? Question mark.
I'm pretty sure it's a Brazilian plus size model, which I'm all in. I'm all in.
So for everyone listening, like if you didn't listen to the first podcast, what we did on the river, like I guess back when you guys were building the calls and we were there and we were talking about this comment that Trent got on the YouTube channel. So last podcast we did, we made everyone do a comment on that and we got some tasty ones. And I wanted Trent to like read all the comments and he pushed
out. It started getting awkward when my son goes, "Hey dad, who's Triple X man? Da 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 da." And I'm like,
"Your lover?
Son, I don't really know." And he's like, "Well, I've seen the comments on YouTube." And I'm like, "You know what?" And then I've got Cody Rich in one ear going, "Dude, you need to read all the comments and show your face." And I'm like, "I don't know if I need to take it to that level right now."
All right. We won't do that this time. But we'll think of something to do a giveaway.
Yep. Yeah, I'm all
Let's
for
do
it.
It. Let's
Love
do
to
it.
It. Let's Love do to, it. I mean, the biggest thing for us is to help people. And, you know, so we're working on a video series right now that kind of goes through some people that are less experienced bugling to try and walk them through that process. Hopefully we can help somebody else. You know, I mean, there's no secrets. We want to help people be as good as they can be, you know, so that's our big deal. So
awesome.
Big time. That's my whole goal in all this, man. It gets me emotional just talking about helping someone to achieve what they want to do.
Yeah.
That's my biggest thing.
It's like getting people over that hurdle. I think so many people are like, not awestruck, but like it seems so far-fetched to do what you guys do or what we do. And it's just like, it's not that hard.
No, like, to us, it's not.
No.
To us, it's not.
Because we've done it a long time. But to so many people, like I always like, man, just do it. Just go. And everyone's like, "I'm thinking about elk hunting in 5 years or 3 years." You're like, no, just go. Like, it doesn't matter. Just go. Like, because you go once and you're going to learn how to, you're going to want to go again. And so
I love
like,
what
just
you
go.
Said, buy the tag, not the gear.
Buy tags, not gear. And I like that. I mean, there's I like nothing that. Against gear. Like, we have nice gear, but it's also been 20 years in the making. Like, I don't, like, you know what I mean? Like, you just acquire stuff. But like, in those early years, buy tags, not gear.
Yeah.
Like, there's some great options out there that you don't have to buy the $900 pack and the
but
big
thinking
TV
about it
and
the
stove
guys
and all.
Thinking about it in the back of my head, the guys that kill those elk every single year, They're buying tags.
Oh, dude,
they
don't have the best gear. I know straight killers.
Yeah, they don't have the best stuff.
They don't. 10-year-old bows.
And... Yep, they don't. They'd shoot them well, and they go to work.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's
time. Yep.
Even if you're not buying tags, even if it's not about buying tags, it's about time in the woods. Like, when you, the irony is, like, you buy all this fancy gear and then you can only hunt on the weekends because you got to work.
Right.
For the guy that's like 2 weeks in the woods.
Time in the field. I mean, that I ran into some guys at Waldron's the other day and they're talking about, well, shoot, I get off work and it's 4 o'clock, you know, so I usually don't go hunt. And I'm like, man, you never know in that. Even if you get to go hunt for 45 minutes an hour that night and you got to drive and do whatever and you come out after dark, like, go do it because you never know.
Learn in that time.
Yeah, exactly.
Exactly.
You could find your next new honey hole that's got a hole in the bowl that, you know, or.
You can't kill on the state record.
Exactly.
You never know.
You can kill a state record in 45 minutes.
Yeah, you sit on the sidelines. It's like, wow, that was a good game.
Yeah.
Maybe next year.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Get out there.
Appreciate you jumping on again. Awesome.
Heck yeah. Hey, appreciate you coming down.
I really appreciate it, man.
You're
good
a stud.
Yeah. All righty. Well, best of luck this year, guys.
Yeah.
Likewise.
You too.
Yeah.
You too.